Is there a place in time where logic breaks down and wonderment begins? Could that be somewhere or sometime along an infinite line between the reasonable and the highly unlikely? Join us on a journey into the improbable.
Makeshift Stories presents Episode 285, Morally Complicit, Part 1. Read by Alan V. Hare. Opening and closing theme by Matthew Erdman. Somewhere and sometime, a good intention will not go unpunished. Kenzo stepped out onto the cracked tarmac. The hot, dry air immediately began attacking his skin, sucking the moisture out of it like a sponge as he surveyed the situation. Behind the ancient regional turboprop he had arrived on, the Rocky Mountains rolled out in a neat line along the western horizon. To the south, he could just make out the tops of a few crumbling office towers through the brown haze. Faded yellow marked a path across the tarmac to a Quonset strapped to the ground in front of an air terminal that had decades ago been abandoned to the elements. On the front of the Quonset, above the entrance, a faded sign identified the structure as Customs. Above that, an electronic billboard scrolled through ads for junk food, cheap cosmetic gene mods, and personal security services. Kenzo squinted in the bright sun to read the small sign beside the door, which welcomed travelers to Calgary, the capital city of the Great Plains Economic Zone. He turned away when someone called his name. "Agent Kenzo Tanaka?" A tall 30-something woman with a slender build and the severe look of private corporate security was beckoning him to step out of line. "Come with me," she commanded, rather than asked. "We've already paid for customs clearance and your water allowance." Kenzo checked as he tentatively stepped over the line to see if the rent-a-cops shepherding the passengers reacted. One glanced his way but appeared to recognize the slender woman as corporate security and immediately turned away to hassle a group dressed in expensive business suits, no doubt to sell them local security for their visit. However, a tourist wearing sunglasses, dressed like she was headed to the mountains, stared at him for just a bit too long to be random curiosity. The woman who had called him over approached and introduced herself. "I'm Agent Lopez from Sagenetics International Partner SynthBio Investigations. Since you don't have any authority here, I'll be your arms and legs." She smiled wanly and held out her hand. Kenzo shook it, then looked back at the long line of passengers waiting for processing. "Thanks for saving me from that. Please just call me Kenzo, Agent Lopez. And I prefer Carmen, and it's no big deal. The GP zone always has an express lane if you have enough money. Don't worry, Sagenetics will get billed for this. I hope you have a generous travel allowance. Come on, let's go." Carmen flashed her ID at the rent-a-cop guarding the exit, then led Kenzo to an ungainly-looking aging gas-powered SUV that looked like it had seen better days. Carmen noted his disapproving stare. "So what? The zone still pumps oil and besides, it supports the local economy. The company likes to keep its overhead low, and gas is cheaper than electricity here." She shrugged. "Anyway, it's the ride they provided. Get in." After passing through an automated toll gate, Kenzo and Carmen quickly left the airfield behind and turned onto what Kenzo took to be an old six-lane expressway. Only one side was being used. The other sported cracks that tough-looking weeds had colonized. "Tell me about your case," Carmen asked after setting the SUV's autopilot. "Corporate didn't say what you're here for." "I'm looking for a person," Kenzo said distractedly, watching a shopping mall overtaken by RVs that hadn't moved in years slide by. "Her name is, or was, Dr. Olivia Morales. She was one of the owners of a company called Aphrodite International, an exclusive clinic that wealthy families used to design and deliver their children. I assume the owners didn't think they were making enough because they ran a side hustle. They hid the existence of unused viable embryos from the parents who paid to have them designed and sold them to offshore couples." "Wow, that was brazenly stupid," Carmen chuckled. "Did they think the wealthy and powerful would just ignore that their tailor-made kids were not unique? So the parents want everyone involved hung out to dry and are applying the pressure to ensure no one, like this Morales, escapes their wrath?" Kenzo nodded. "Yes, something along those lines." He didn't reveal the ultimatum he faced: either pursue Morales or take all the heat for concealing his awareness of the embryo scheme. which came to light when another agent, acting on an internal tip, exposed it. The executives at Sagenetics showed little concern for Kenzo's efforts to shield an innocent teenager until she reached 21, when Aphrodite would issue licenses for her mods, a compromise reached with the teenager's mother to ensure her silence. The mother worked as a technician at Aphrodite in the assessment lab, receiving her daughter's modifications as compensation for manipulating embryo counts to siphon off some undetected. Morales disappeared about 3 years ago at the height of the embryo scam, he explained. Her assets were automatically frozen as soon as she was reported missing. There was no reason to go after her until we had enough evidence to shut the operation down and prosecute its perpetrators. The tech with the modded daughter had probably tipped her off. At least, that was what he had come to believe. A message from Sagenetics popped up on his contact lens. Failure to apprehend Morales is not an option if you ever want to return. He didn't need the reminder. Had some new info scared the bosses at Sagenetics, so they were now trying to put more pressure on him to clean up the problem he had inadvertently created? If it ever got out that one of their agents had known, Sagenetics would go down hard. And if they went down, well, he would go down harder. And you have a reason to suspect Morales is in the Great Plains Economic Zone? Carmen probed. Yeah, Kenzo confirmed. Since there's no formal government here, extradition isn't an option, so it's the perfect place to hide. Plus, one of her former partners tipped us off, after we applied a little persuasion. I think she caught wind of the impending exposure of their embryo scheme and fled with her child, a son who would likely be around 11 or 12 by now and probably genetically enhanced. All Aphrodite execs designed their offspring. We were also told that Morales underwent off-the-record facial modifications. Someone at Aphrodite likely performed the procedure, although our source didn't know who. She and the kid are probably trying to conceal his enhancements. People tend to relax and slip up over time. So we're looking for a mother with unlicensed facial mods and a son who may occasionally display extraordinary abilities. That's not much to go on, Carmen complained. If Morales hasn't infringed on a local corporation's intellectual property, we can't detain her. Did Aphrodite operate in the zone? No, Kenzo shook his head. Only in Cascadia and the richer Pacific Rim zones. They followed the big money. Too bad, Carmen said. If Aphrodite had, we could have picked Morales up for her unlicensed facial mods. I guess it makes sense why she ended up here. The GPFT doesn't care who crosses its borders, only that they pay their freight once they're here. And if you don't, you end up like them. She nodded at a shantytown made from tarps and packing crates that had taken over a section of the expressway's closed half. Your fate is your responsibility. That's how it works here in the GP. There are no rules, so you can soar as high as possible or fail and fall on your sword. No one cares. What's your plan? Lure her over the border if we can find her. But that's my problem, Kenzo said, looking out the window again. The old SUV began slowing, pulling onto an off-ramp leading to another road that paralleled a mostly dry riverbed spotted with the occasional pool of stagnant water. It only flows in the spring when there's enough melting snow from the mountains, Carmen explained, directing the big machine to steer off the road onto a side street and stop in front of a low-rise office building beside a crumbling overpass. The bottom floors looked abandoned, and the windows had been boarded over with graffiti-covered plywood. SynthBio Investigations office is on the top floor, Carmen announced, getting out. Kenzo started to follow when a flash of light caught his attention. Across the street, a figure, her dark glasses momentarily catching the sun, was studying him. She looked familiar. Where had he seen her before? Are you coming? Carmen called over her shoulder impatiently. Kenzo looked away for a second, and when he turned back, the woman was gone. After introductions, Kenzo followed Carmen to a situation room, a windowless space filled with screens, displaying CCTV and drone feeds on one side and net streams on the other. She showed him a workstation with a built-in terminal. From here, you have access to SynthBio's security data system. I want to flag any kid who demonstrates unusual abilities, Kenzo announced, scrutinizing the setup skeptically. Our systems, well, they're not standard, they're locally coded. Let me help, Carmen volunteered. She nudged Kenzo aside and sat at the terminal, her hands dancing across the keyboards. It took only a few seconds for her to find a video. They watched it together. "The kid built the rig to help his friend," the vlogger explained. "She got injured in a hit-and-run accident, and her family doesn't have the money for stem cell therapy to repair her spine. The exoskeleton is made out of recycled parts. Brainwaves control it through a new interface technology invented by this 12-year-old genius. As you can see, it's incredible. I've agreed not to identify him as he prefers to remain anonymous." A young girl wearing an exoskeleton over her legs ran through a field as a camera drone followed. She weaved and jumped, then abruptly stopped at a bench where a boy was watching her. When he realized he was in the frame, he quickly turned away from the camera. "Back up, freeze video," Kenzo directed. "The boy is the right age, created something even a big corp would have trouble making and doesn't want to be videoed. Too bad he's in silhouette, there's no chance of facial recognition." Carmen leaned in. "I know where that is. It's near a makerspace in the Northeast that's got a gene-cutting lab for plants. It's used by hobbyists playing around to adapt exotic veggies to the zone's climate. All small-scale and all unsuccessful. With the water situation, the key characteristic is drought tolerance, and all drought-resistant genes are owned by the agritechs, who are very aggressive about enforcing their patents. We get paid to keep tabs on the place just in case someone decides to slide in a bit of corporate IP without a license." "So Agritech pays the freight around here and you turn a blind eye to unlicensed human mods," Kenzo concluded cynically. "Until some big corp is willing to pay for compliance," Carmen pointed out, "like everyone else, we follow the money." "Fair enough, but it goes against my instincts to turn a blind eye to infractions," Kenzo conceded, looking at the image of the boy frozen on the screen. "That video's been generating a lot of interest," he remarked, noticing an uptick in views. "We need to get over there and set up surveillance. If it's the right kid, I don't want some IP troll to get to him first." An hour later, Kenzo sat in the back seat of the old SUV, eyes fixed on a screen showing views from the drones. So they wouldn't be noticed, Carmen had parked the vehicle roughly 2 blocks away from the makerspace. After deploying little aerial spies, they retreated to the comfort of the air-conditioned SUV to escape the sweltering heat. The drones they had launched carried modified lasers that would shoot ultraviolet light at people and plants to look for the markers, bioluminescent sea pickle genes, that every lab and gene modder left in the skin. The makerspace was housed in an old tire shop within a strip mall, rear-facing an abandoned lot, where the video had been recorded. Over a few hours, a steady stream of individuals entered and exited. While most sported licensed cosmetic modifications from local studios, interspersed among them, were individuals flaunting unauthorized alterations to their hair and skin enough to warrant intervention in Cascadia. However, to Kenzo's consternation, Carmen merely identified them, adding their names to a list. "Just in case," she explained. "You never know when the situation might change and there's interest and money for enforcement." Late in the afternoon, the boy in the vid and his friend arrived on bikes. The girl's exoskeleton was better than Kenzo had expected. She had enough control to ride with ease. "Fluoresce the boy." "It's already done," Carmen replied. A spectrograph appeared on the screen beside the video feed from the closest drone. Kenzo scrutinized it. "There's something there, but it's like the kid's skin's been altered by some back alley hacker," he complained. "It's fluorescing all over the spectrum, making it impossible to pick out IP tags." "So he might be your target, but you can't tell," Carmen confirmed, and began to recall the drones. "Wait, that woman across the street who just got out of a cab. I've seen her before, in front of your office and," Kenzo hesitated, "at the airport, I think." The woman started to walk across the street toward the makerspace, then suddenly turned and looked directly at the drone. She spun around and quickly disappeared back into the cab, which sped away, spinning its tires on the gravel. "Wonder what that was about," Carmen mused, watching the autocab fishtail around a corner, kicking up a cloud of dust. "I don't know, but that woman has shown up 3 times now," Kenzo said, rolling the drone video back to watch her again. "When we get back to your office, I want to run her image and see if your database has any matches." They waited until the boy and his friend left, then went to the makerspace. There, they found themselves in a small entry, plastered with electronic posters for classes and examples of members' inventions. Behind one door, they could hear the muffled sounds of power tools. Another labeled administrator was partly open. Kenzo knocked on it. "Come in," a friendly voice invited. "If you're interested in joining, it's $100 up front, then $75 a month." "We're not interested in becoming members," Carmen said, taking the lead. "We're hoping to talk to you about one. That boy who just left with the girl using the EXO." Figures. The man dressed in work overalls and a baseball cap motioned them to a group of rather uncomfortable-looking chairs. Kenzo and Carmen sat. "You don't look like makers or modders," the man noted with barely concealed hostility. "I'm Theo, the manager of this place. I warned them not to post that video. I knew it would bring corporates like you down here sniffing around." Carmen began to pull out her ID, but Kenzo stopped her with a meaningful look. "Caught us," Kenzo smiled. "That girl's got quite the rig. Did the boy build it by himself?" "We all felt sorry for Ima when she got hit by that truck. But I guess you already know her story from the vid. One of our naive members called in that vlogger, hoping to raise money for Ima's stem cell treatment. We all want the rig to be a temporary solution." Theo eyed them critically. "I'm guessing you didn't come here to donate." "If you answer a few questions," Kenzo glanced at Carmen, "we might have some extra cash. What's the kid's name, and did he always have such an unusual aptitude for neurointerfaces?" Theo studied them again. "You look like you could afford a few hundred." "Sure," Kenzo smiled. "We can do that." "The makerspace automatically owns a percentage of anything invented using our resources," Theo explained. "So any negotiations on rights to the interface go through our lawyers." "Agreed." "Yes, of course," Kenzo replied, playing along. "Okay then, this is all I'm willing to tell you before we have an agreement." Theo leaned back in his chair. "The boy's name is Kumar. He lives with his mother. She's an assistant at a small modding studio. It doesn't pay much. So Kumar has been helping out around here to cover his membership fees. He's pretty good. But until he built that neuro interface, I wouldn't have pegged him as unusually brilliant." Theo described how upset Kumar had been about his friend, and how he convinced everyone to work on the robotic EXO. Then, single-handedly, designed and fabricated a neuro interface that was generations ahead of anything on the market. Knowing what would happen, he had tried to keep it quiet. "And now you're here, and there's going to be a flood of other interested parties," Theo Air quoted. "But how the kid did it is only in his head. There is no documentation, you see, so you can see why I need to be protective." It was the right kid. Kenzo was sure of it and could taste how close he was getting to the mother. "Do you know where Kumar lives?" he asked hopefully. The manager shook his head. "No." "How often does he come in?" Theo just stared at them defiantly. "You negotiate with us, not the kid. That's the deal. Take it or leave. By tomorrow, there will be a line of corporate reps right out to the street." He smiled confidently. They wouldn't get any more from the man. If he hadn't already done so, he would warn the kids to lay low. Kenzo cursed and got up. As they left the building, a message scrolled across his contacts. "You're being followed. You need to acquire the target before they do." To be continued. You can help us create original content twice a month by heading over to ko-fi.com/makeshiftstories and making a one-time donation, or becoming an ongoing supporter at patreon.com/makeshiftstories. And if you can, please leave us a review or rating wherever you're listening to the podcast. It helps new listeners discover us. If you'd like to connect with us, please send an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. Links to both are in the show notes. Makeshift Stories is released around the beginning and middle of the month. This month's story was written and read by Alan V. Hare. Opening and closing themes were composed and recorded by Matthew Erdman. Audio production and editing by Makeshift Studios. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial. Attribution, no derivative license.